You know how they gave us those little, like, pamphlets that were, it was like a little booklet, and it had like calendar dates and events and times of things to do during orientation week.
Sure.
That
yeah,
was
cool,
outside
yeah.
of your O week or your, uh-huh. your orientation group shit. So I had that in hand, and I was sitting in my room, and I was just doing my little thing, my little life. I was just living. And I get a text from this girl who I had met like the day before, and she was super nice, you know. She texts me and she's like, "Hey, it was nice to meet you yesterday. I was wondering if you're going to the Danger today." And I was like,
"What?
I don't know what that is." So I was like looking in the pamphlet and I was like, "Oh, I don't see it listed under O Week activities. Where's the Danger?" And she's like, "It means Day Rager." And she never responded to another one of my texts.
Oh, buddy. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. So welcome to the podcast. Thanks for having me, Shane. Big fan of being a guest on this podcast.
No, of course. I'm really glad that we could finally book you. You know, I know your schedule is pretty complicated, but
you know, it honestly honor, is. Really. It's an honor for me. The pleasure, literally all mine.
Wow, it means a lot to hear that.
So, who are you? And what do you do?
I'm Shane. I write in theory and I podcast.
Nice.
What about you?
That's good. I'm Trevor.
Welcome to Out of Dodge, a podcast where we talk about movies, TV shows, video games, kind of anything vaguely pop culturally.
We went to film school and we're here now on the internet. Shane, can I tell you a real quick funny story?
Yep.
My mom ran into a woman who works as a like a podcast network distributor, whatever. She works for like a podcast network, right?
Okay.
And she's like, "Oh, my son also does a podcast. He does the film podcast."
That's what it's called, yeah.
First off, didn't say the title of the podcast, but also the way she said it makes me think that she thinks there's only one film podcast. That, like, we cornered the market. Yeah. We're the film podcast.
We're the film podcast, guys. So today we're talking about reminiscence. I'm kidding. We can't. Too bad.
No, it's so bad, Shane.
Today.
War crimes.
Today we're going to be talking about sitcoms, why they work, why they don't, and why even when they end in the dumbest way possible, you still have a nice little spot in your heart for them.
A sitcom or a situational comedy, if you're a big old nerd. Is a genre of comedy centered around a fixed set of characters who return episode after episode, as opposed to, you know, stand-up comedy, which is one comedian or two doing a stand-up show, telling jokes to an audience, or a sketch comedy, which is non-reoccurring characters, actors maybe playing different characters for each sketch, you know, no plot through line, yada yada. A sitcom, a television show, can be recorded in front of a studio audience or like with a laugh track. It could be, you know, kind of set up as a stage play, you know, or it could be a single camera setup that's more in line of kind of like modern dramas. So the whole phrase dramedy kind of comes from that. So many contemporary American sitcoms use the single camera setup and do not feature a laugh track, therefore resembling a dramedy of the 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
So sitcoms, they're also very unifying in like a weird way. When something gets really popular, I mean, this goes for any show, but especially for a comedy and everybody's watching it, it fosters this weird sense of community. Even, mm-hmm. I mean, literally with the show community, even after the show has been off air for several years, you can be like, "Hey, remember that show?" And people would be like, "Yeah, I do." Or you'll end up rewatching it. And it really just captures like a good energy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. So something really unique about sitcoms is that they are super approachable. Like a lot of shows, even if it has like a through plot line, you can sit down and watch an episode of How I Met Your Mother and be like, "I get it." You know? Like, the characters, they're kind of similar, per episode. They have their bits. They have catchphrases. They have, you know, very clear goals and desires.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that they aren't nuanced, but they do kind of fit into their roles very nicely. And throughout a show's run, there's really little change between how they interact with each other.
Ideally, there's some change. Although yes. There, some of them, it's very much like, oh, I guess we were kind of just here for no reason.
Yeah, yeah. But they also are, for shows on networks, right, with traditional commercials, even Hulu, shows are 22 minutes long. That's not a big investment. Say I'm someone after work, I'm like, oh, I'm tired, I don't want to watch a whole movie, I don't want to sit down and, like, focus on a plot line of SVU or whatever. You know, an episode of King of Queens or Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like, that's quick, that's easy, I know what's happening.
Yeah.
And everything kind of gets resolved within that 30 minutes, and mm-hmm. I feel good. I'm like, hey, that was fun.
Hey, we did it.
Do it again next week, same time, okay. You know, and so I think that's something that really helps people connect with the show, because it is approachable.
I would agree.
It's really easy to just jump in, which is why maybe they're such big cultural touchstones. So for most sitcoms,
yes,
the budgets are pretty low. There's not a lot of need for special effects. There's not a lot of need for, you know, crazy sets or stunts. It's just pretty, you know, standard. And then the stakes within each plot of each episode are also generally pretty low, too. And while there are continuing plot lines, the main conflict of each episode is usually taken care of by the end. And streaming has kind of changed this, because the idea behind, you know, like, say, Netflix, where it releases everything at once, they want you to keep watching BoJack Horseman episode after episode after episode. Like, it's built for you to watch it all in one sitting. And so they are gonna leave things unresolved, so you click on the next one and you keep watching. So streaming has altered that formula ever so slightly, but that is more of a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. So I want to start by talking about How I Met Your Mother, which is kind of a mess for mm-hmm. so many reasons. And yeah, just watched all of it.
Everybody has. The whole nation has.
What's weird, though, is, like, when I got to college, I was like, well, yeah, I saw How I Met Your Mother, but who else cares? But then I found out, like, that apparently everyone had watched it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, when did we all get the time to just decide to do this? How I Met Your Mother has that good framing device where it's the idea of a man telling his kids, and maybe it takes a little bit too long, telling his kids the story of how he met their mother. And, you know, he's in New York with a bunch of fun friends and they go through hijinks. There's goodwill there, you know, mm-hmm. there's the idea of hope and, like, trying to find meaning in your life, but also trying to find love and to navigate your friendships. The knowing that there is, like, an answer helps the show in the sense
yes.
that, like, okay, well, if I stick with it, I'm going to get a payoff. Will that
yeah.
payoff immediately be upended?
Yes.
Yes.
Something that I like about How I Met Your Mother is it had a clear end goal.
Yeah.
Whether or not, you know, that end goal was satisfying is another story, but it had a place where it wanted to be, and it was going to get there eventually. Where a bunch of other shows kind of meander, and Seinfeld, right?
Yeah.
It's a funny show. I enjoy Seinfeld. Sue me. But, like, it was described as a show about nothing, and I think that's perfect for a lot of sitcoms. I think a lot of sitcoms are just like, here's this, you know, quirky problem for the week. And How I Met Your Mother had that persistent goal and intention throughout. It got watered down.
A little.
A lot. But it was there. It was there.
Yeah, one thing that I want to say, two things. Number one, is it super dated?
Yes. Hey,
and,
oh my
you know,
God.
a little problematic, a little racist, a little sexist. Oh, definitely. The 2000s were a time in which people had a lot of bad opinions on things. And then number two,
mm-hmm.
it was clear they had that goal, as you were saying, like, they had the end in mind. But at the same
yeah.
time, they had the twist. Can we just spoil the show? Is that bad?
I mean, the show ended in 2014.
2014.
Yeah.
So, hey, team, we're going to spoil the show. Skip ahead 2 minutes if you care. You probably don't. basically, so the whole show is about him meeting the mother. And then in the last season, and what I kind of like, in the last season, it takes place over a weekend. And all the other characters end up meeting the mother before he does. So that we as an audience get to meet her. And then they have the whole episode where it's like what she was doing while the show is happening. So you get to see how all the events happen and like the yellow umbrella and there's all this shit. It's cute. I like it. Into it. And then he meets the mother and you're like, we did it. The show is over. April Fools. Friends, she gets cancer
and dies immediately.
And then at the end of the show they're like, actually it was Robin and you should be with Robin now. And the problem with that is, so Robin was a good through line in like season one, you know, like with the rain dance, and it was cute and you wanted them to get together. But as the show went on, it was like, well, maybe they shouldn't be together anymore. Like the spark kind of faded. It just didn't feel right.
And they were like horrible to each other. Yeah. Yeah,
that too. But like the show was not willing to like meet the characters where they ended up because it was so committed to just doing the idea they had on day one, which I think was kind of a disservice because you have to kind of grow the show. Otherwise, it's going to become stale and not.
Yeah. And just because you want something to happen doesn't mean that it's the right thing to happen.
Yeah.
I heard the story that they shot the ending. Well, specifically the kids. I think they shot like the throughout the show, the kids react to his story. And I think they shot that bit, like, in one sitting. And, like, during season one, you know, the kids are like, well, you should have been with Aunt Robin. But here's one thing that I'll say about this show that, I mean, I enjoyed How I Met Your Mother when I was watching it. I haven't watched it since, because I'm afraid.
To go back to.
Yeah, one of those characters is kind of a predator. But anyways, they had a really good cast, a really strong cast that obviously had chemistry on screen. And the characters fit into their roles really well, right? Like, Ted was the everyman who was kind of like, you know, a little down on his luck. But, like, kind of charming and kind of a bleeding heart romantic kind of guy.
Yeah.
Barney's the womanizer, cool friend who's, like, always in a suit.
Marshall's the dork friend.
Marshall's the dorky Lily's friend.
The art wife.
Yeah. Robin's the kind of tomboyish girl next door type.
Yeah, and her dad's insane, yeah.
Her dad's a...
the devil.
Probably a killer, yeah.
Well, I mean, a killer in Twin Peaks, yeah, spoiler, team.
Also the captain, isn't it, too? He's in Twin Peaks, yeah.
Both.
Throughout, like, there's different changes to, like, the dynamics between the characters, you know. There's a season where Lily and Marshall aren't together. It's a whole deal. But for the whole run of the show, they pretty much fit into those roles pretty perfectly.
Yeah.
They don't deviate too far from the formula, and that's fine. And that works because, you know, we get to know the characters. And, like, you know, on some very sad level, we're like, oh, Ted and Barney are our friends. You know, like, we turn on the TV, we know what to expect. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get you. I do think I like shows better when the characters grow a little more, maybe, than How I Met Your Mother.
Exactly. No, I'm not saying that's what you should do, but I'm saying it.
There is a comfort to it. I agree.
And there is a success to it. The cast is good. And sitcoms, they will live or die on the cast. You don't watch a sitcom for like the crazy plots that are happening, right? Like a procedural, you don't watch a sitcom for the crime of the week.
For like the pudding murder. You watch it for the funny characters to solve the murder.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so if the characters aren't resonating with the audience, it tanks.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. But if it does succeed, you have people walking around like, oh, you're such a Ted. Or like, ah, I'm so goofy, I'm a Rachel or whatever. Or like, I do magic, so I'm a Job.
Yeah, good old Job.
Good old Job Bluth, Arrested Development. Such a good, like, two seasons. God damn.
I like how season three ends, but yeah.
Season three is like, there's a good portion of season three that is just highly problematic, but.
I know exactly what you're talking about. You're correct. You are correct.
Mr. F.
Yeah, no, not great.
Season one's fantastic, though. Season two, funny. So good.
God. Can we just talk about Arrested Development?
Can we talk about Arrested Development?
Yes, of course we can.
Arrested Development was the first show that I watched on Netflix, and also the first show that I binge-watched, and I cried laughing every single episode. It was on Fox for three seasons. It was canceled for about, like, I want to say, like, five years. And then Netflix was like, but what if? And fourth season was, I think, maybe one of the first Netflix exclusives.
So let me, I'll describe what it was and then what it became.
Yes.
So it was kind of this wild show. And so you had good old Michael Bluth. He rolled in because his father was
Jason Bateman.
Yeah, arrested for crimes. And he was like, I can fix everything. He's kind of a control freak, but that's kind of what you need. And his family is kind of a disaster, and they're always trying to take money and do schemes and whatever.
Yeah, they're spoiled brats now learning how to, you know, be in the real world.
It's super funny, and you have all these dynamic characters you can jump back and forth between and all these, like, funny things. And there's, you know, there's always money in the banana stand. A lot of joy, a lot of quality there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also, like, a narrator, and that kind of added a fun element. And that's not something most shows could do, but, you know, it kind of made it seem like a documentary or kind of like a wider story, and it was exciting.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was three seasons, and then it got canceled, like you said, and then Netflix did it. And Netflix was like, what if, instead of doing that thing where I jump back between all the characters you love, each episode will kind of be this weird, meandering, foggy nightmare where we'll focus on one person at a time.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, that's not super funny to watch.
No, it's not. I do love the scene, though, in season four where it's the To Catch a Predator, and Tobias is dressed up like the Thing.
Oh, yeah.
And he walks in and he's trying to talk to his daughter, and he's like, come on, daddy needs to get his rocks off. And I'm like,
yeah,
it's good.
No,
it's good.
Blew myself is like top 10 lines.
David Cross is just such a goddamn joy to watch. Then they did a recut of the season like 2 years later, and then a year after that, they came out with, like, six episodes? Or, like, four episodes? Five episodes? They came out with a fifth season.
Okay.
Which was the final season.
Yes.
But I remember this, because this was a very weird thing for me. They were confident enough that it would win Emmys, or get nominated for Emmys, but they only had half the season ready. So they released half a season in order to qualify for Emmys of that year, and then released the second half, like, in, you know, the following February. It was super weird, and I think it kind of tanked the enjoyment of that season, because it's broken up into two, and I never finished it because of that.
After season four, I was like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Greener pastures.
Yeah. But a fantastic show. Really smart. A lot of, like, bits that they do, a lot of returning gags and jokes,
yeah.
And like a stellar cast, absolutely bonkers cast. A lot of, like, before they were big cast, like Michael Cera, Jason Bateman, David Cross is in it, Portia, whatever her name is, Portia Ellen's wife, Portia, Will Arnett, like, honestly, like, great cast. But definitely it felt like a lightning in a bottle situation, where, like, the writing and the acting just, like, was perfect. And it just kind of won't happen again.
The bottle exploded, yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote down about 1,000 examples, but all I want to do is talk about Community.
I was literally just going to say, hey, another show that had a weird middle and end.
A weird, impossible energy and history to the show Community.
Yes.
Which ran for six seasons, about 110 episodes.
Community is probably my favorite show of all time.
Before I explain anything about the show, yeah, I rewatched like half of the series this summer on vacation,
mm-hmm,
and it made me feel happy and good about being alive in a way that I cannot explain.
Yes.
It's just so good.
I did the same during the start of the Waterworld stunt show. I was like, I'll watch this, and it just was like so much joy.
My joy tank, the replenished. Fun fact, team, just a little behind the scenes, it was created by Dan Harmon, and he did like season 1, 2, and 3, and then for I don't 100% know why he was fired, and they were like, we'll do season 4 on our own, we got it, we got the cast, how hard can it be? It's terrible. Season 4, which they refer to in canon as the gas leak year, was a kind of a charmless little nightmare, and it was very much like they were like, oh, we'll just put the sets up and put the characters in the set, and then the show will just happen by itself.
Yeah.
Didn't.
Nope.
But then season 5 rolled back. We're back on track. It's a little shaky because you're kind of doing damage control. But ultimately,
oh, but
you're
Dan
like, okay.
Harmon was back.
Yeah,
for
but
season
you're
five.
Like, okay,
yeah,
this is working. Like we're kind of back in step. Things make more sense. And then it gets booted. You know, it gets murdered. Community gets murdered. And then Yahoo Screen comes out of the shadows. And like you don't have long. We have like a year to do Yahoo Screen, but we're gonna bring Community back. We're gonna give it season 6, and we're gonna end it in a weirdly great way. And then Yahoo Screen's gonna vanish into the ether, never to be heard from again. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
They did it for us.
Anyways, we didn't describe what the show was.
We didn't describe what Community is.
So
hey,
Community.
Yeah.
Community is a lovable TV show about a very quirky, arguably terrible community college. The characters are super wild, super zany. It feels like the writing's really good. Characters change, they go through things, and they, you know, learn more about themselves. Sometimes they still are up to their own clown bullshit, but you know what? It's okay. It's fine. You know what? We're here for it.
The main character, who's played by Joel McHale, Jeff Winger, is a lawyer who lied about going to law school and was a lawyer for several years. And they were like, hey, wait a minute, bud. And he was like, fuck. And then he's like, I'm going to go to the worst college and like knock this out of the park. And at first he's like kind of a very slimy dude. He's like, I just want what's best for me. That's kind of all I care about. I want to get in. I want to get out. But he becomes a better person over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he grows up. He ends up working at the college. And it's just nice to see people change. And it's something that's very much at the forefront of the show. It's not like something they hide.
Yeah.
Like, you can literally see people grow up, and then people change, and people deal with shit that's hard.
People die, and people leave, and, you know, sometimes they come back as, like, a ghost detective or something. Bayou detective, that's what it was.
Yes.
But there's ghosts in the bayou, so you can understand my confusion. It's just a show that has a lot of heart, and even when it's bad, it is probably better than a lot of the other shows that are on my list.
The thing about it is that Community is like willing to go places that other shows just can't. Like the way they play with genre, they can be like, we'll do a zombie episode and then we'll do paintball warfare and then we'll do paintball warfare again but better and we'll do multiple timelines. And I'm like, this is insane, and it works, and it's so funny.
Yeah.
And they did Claymation, and like they're willing to do things that are just so crazy, and they put the characters in these situations, and it's great.
And it's so weird that was on NBC, because I cannot see them taking a chance on a show like this ever again. And like, I get it, because it wasn't ever really the most popular show, but it had a really dedicated fan base. It was good. It's so good. It has this joy that it exudes, because like the school's terrible, but you never hate the school. And like, some of the classes are just awful. Like, Betty White's in it for, like, a couple episodes until she harpoons Jeff Winger. or chokes him out with a net or something.
Yeah, one of those, yeah.
Yeah. Crazy cast, too. A lot of like, before they were big as well. Ladders 101. Will It Fry.
Yeah, also, the episodes are all named after, like, funny class names.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's fun, it's dynamic, and then you're like, I know what this episode's about.
Yeah. And they do a clip episode where they show clips from episodes we've never seen, which is great. Yeah, I love it so much.
Like, you think you know what you're getting, but you're like, wait a minute. The episode where it's like there's a conspiracy class and it doesn't exist, but it does exist. It's fucking hysterical.
It's good. It's really good.
The episode where they have a debate and they basically prove that mankind is evil. Fantastic.
The air conditioning school, like, trial.
Oh, God. Yeah, and they murder somebody. The room temperature room.
Take him to the prison of eternal heat. Take him to the police. He killed somebody.
There is such a... We were talking about how the cast makes or breaks a sitcom.
Yeah.
And there's such a found family element. Because, like, none of these people are related. And they haven't really met each other before. And at first, they're kind of at odds. But, like, they love each other so much.
Yeah.
And they, like, they fight together. Like, they fight against the school or against City College or against this or that or this. And it's great, you know?
And they're all, like... You know, not in, like, Always Sunny, where they're all terrible, because there's not a single redeemable character in It's Always Sunny, but they are all, like, losers, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely have character flaws.
Yeah, they're all, like, one's just an old racist man who, like,
one of them
shouldn't have been on the show.
His name's Pierce, but,
like,
you're
correct. They're all flawed, and it's fun to watch them get better or get worse or just try to interact in situations where they have to be better.
It's one of those shows where you could see it continuing past this last season.
Mm-hmm.
But the show itself wrestles with that and is like, no, it'd be better for the characters and for the audience and for everybody if the show ended on a good note.
Yes.
And it chose how to end, and then it was like, I'm gone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's right.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, you get that sense of closure and you're like, these people are going to be all right. And, like, I know with Community, there's, like, six seasons in a movie. That's, like, the tagline because it was a cape joke, but that's become the rallying cry for the show. And I'm like, as much as I want a movie, do we need one? You know? Would it maybe undermine?
It would undermine a lot. So the thing is, the cast is all pretty chummy still. During the Waterworld stunt show, they did a table reading of an episode. It was really wholesome. Really good. What would you feel if they did another season?
That'd be weird. Right? I feel like it has to be a movie because then it's kind of like a dessert.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we would want another like a main course.
What if they did like a six episode or like a special, like an hour long special or something like that?
You gotta give me 2 hours. If you're fucking making me go back, you gotta give me. I know I just said I don't want it, but if you're making me go back,
I mean, we're gonna watch it regardless.
No, of course, this hypothetical thing. I'm 100%.
I think Dan Harmon has his hands full. I think pretty much everyone else on the cast besides Joel McHale has something to do.
I think Joel McHale's on a murder cooking show or something.
Should we go through some other just rapid fire, some other notables?
Yeah, sure. You throw one and then I'll...
Friends.
I didn't watch Friends, but yeah.
That's,
what's your feelings?
It's fine. It's weird they don't address 9/11, but Friends is good. It's one of those that, to me, at least, kind of overstayed its welcome, but it's very much a cultural touchstone where a lot of people in America have seen Friends. A lot of people from out of the U.S. have an idea of America because of Friends, which is, it's pretty cool, pretty interesting. But to me, it's just a lot of the whitest people in New York doing stuff, which is also Friends or Seinfeld. But
yeah, a lot of shows suffer from that. From that particular problem.
A lot of shows that like started in the 90s.
Yeah.
Or sooner.
If we're talking about cultural touchstones.
Yes.
I'll briefly talk about The Office, which is a show that pretty much everyone's talked about to death.
Yeah.
And I love it. And it's great. And for like six seasons, very strong. After that, we take a little bit of a nosedive. Something that I would like to bring up is that a lot of great sitcoms are fueled by a will they, won't they romance.
Mm-hmm.
Romance. And I'm not saying that has to be the case, but a lot of the best sitcoms have that, like, romantic conflict or, like, ooh, what's going to happen? Or, like, you're rooting for these people to get together. And oftentimes, once the characters do get together, the show collapses.
Yes.
Because they don't invent another conflict or anything interesting to happen. And you're kind of like, okay, why am I here? So in The Office, once Jim and Pam get together and then they get married, you're like, okay, well... we did it.
I think it's fine until they have a kid. And then it's like, okay. Like, give me something else, you know?
Well, once Michael leaves and James Spader, who's like the worst part of The Office probably.
He's the lizard king.
It's so not funny. And also, Andy Bernard, who is a character they introduced around season two or three.
Three.
He was kind of fun. He had anger issues, but he was kind of a wild personality. And then they make him the boss. They don't write for him.
No.
And they set up a romance for him, and then they just chuck it in the toilet because they don't feel like writing it. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, he's not a good, I would argue, not really a great main character. He's a good supporting character that says something.
Yeah, but I also feel like they don't. This means nothing if you haven't seen The Office team. My point is...
I don't know who hasn't, but...
yeah, it was real good for a long time, and then it got pretty bad. But then they stuck the landing somehow out of nowhere, and because of the fact that it was good and then it ended well, you can kind of forgive the sins of the awkward middle.
Yeah, but, you know, hey, it used to be on Netflix, ad-free, and then they were like, what if NBC starts its own horribly named... streaming service. So sorry if that was your comfort show, and if you had anxiety you would just turn that on and watch it. I know a lot of people that would do that, and now they have to watch it on Peacock, and that's not as great.
Yeah, another show like that, Parks and Rec, which if I can say something really controversial,
hit me,
might be the better and better written show.
I
that was on NBC.
Full-heartedly agree.
Thank you.
Full-heartedly.
And one of the main reasons with Parks and Rec, which is about kind of a ragtag group of people in Indiana who are trying, despite the town itself, to save a small town. Like, they're honestly thrown everything and everything's against them, but they're trying their hardest. And there is, like, a genuine hope and sense of goodwill, like, that powers that show. Even though, like, you know, the boss is grumpy, or, like, people are like, oh, we should have sodas the size of children. And just, it's so, and, like, there's drones, there's all kinds of crazy shit in this show. The cast is wonderful. You watch them grow over time. You watch people get together, like Leslie and Ben and April and Andy, and it's adorable and it's good. And, like, there's no, like, collapse. I know I said that once people get together, the show collapses.
No, but
somehow it kept going.
And, well, the thing was, I think they didn't really focus on their relationship past that point. Like, they got together and they're like, there's going to be, like, two or three marital things where, like, you know, shit goes wild. But
they still let them be characters.
But they let them be characters. And, well, that was just because they were better written characters in general.
Yeah.
And they had clear goals and wants before they got together.
The last season does a 3-year time jump, which I love, because it lets you play a fun game of catch up. And you're like, where are all these people and what are they doing? And also, they stick the landing on everyone gets, like, a good ending.
Yes.
And it's really sweet and it's really endearing. And you're like, what a good show. And then they even did an episode during the Waterworld stunt show, kind of about how hard it is to, like, keep track of everybody and to do things during the terrible thing that's still happening. And it was also good.
Yeah.
And it just reminded you of, like, how good the cast was and how good it felt to, like, watch it.
Yeah. It's really good show. I think it's the superior of the mockumentary NBC shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna list just, like, 3.
No.
We're not gonna really...
Go nut.
Talk just too much about
whatever you want. Go.
New Girl, pretty good.
Oh God, yeah.
for a time, that's the thing. That's the thing with a lot of sitcoms.
I want to say what did we say? Like maybe 3 or so seasons are really funny with New Girl, and then it kind of gets boring. And it's not necessarily because the two characters get together. It's more just because they run out of things to happen. I do want to say about which is one small thing about New Girl is that when I lived in. In sophomore year, when I had the apartment with 3 other dudes, we just got together one day and we were like, let's just watch New Girl. And we would lose entire weekends.
It's so funny.
To New Girl. And it's just like this really funny sitcom and Zooey Deschanel is there.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was like endearing. I was like, this is funny. I'm having a good time with this show.
There's one episode that where one of the characters thinks he has cancer or something. Mm. And that's...
I wrote that down. The beach... Yeah, I wrote that down.
That's like... That episode could be a short film. It's so
great.
Good.
Dude, I think...
Are we best Jack friends? Is it, that just
Jack,
happened?
I think it's Jack Johnson who plays Nick in that show. It's really good.
Yeah.
He's just so fucking funny.
Mm-hmm.
And New Girl. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really good.
Yeah.
Because he's playing, like, an idiot, sad writer. And I'm like, hey, it's me.
But he's really endearing. Like...
So endearing.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yes.
Besides being aggressive propaganda, it's really good.
I like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Big fan of Andy Samberg. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed that he was able to like hold that show. I mean, it's an ensemble cast for sure.
But
and
he's
a lot of good performances.
He's the main.
But yeah, but he's definitely the main character, and like he handles it really well. Yeah. And he's really funny, and he's trying to do his best. And he's a huge fan of Die Hard. And you're like, okay,
yeah, me too.
That.
Yeah,
yeah. It's in its last season right now, actually.
And that was on Fox. That was another transplant. That was on Fox for. Like 6 seasons?
Yeah, and then they kind of canceled it unceremoniously, and everyone was like, that was dumb. And NBC was like, hey,
yeah.
We got time. We got money. We'll do a couple more seasons of this.
It does a good job of having a very diverse cast of characters.
That is true, yes.
And it's fun to watch them all. They're good at their job, but they're just screwballs, you know?
Yeah, they're too wacky.
They're too wacky to know what laws are, you know? Scrubs. Loved Scrubs. That's another one that was solid, and then it had a last season with, like, none of the characters in it. It was a show that was really good, and then it should have ended, and then tried to keep going. Again, like, Friends kind of overstayed its welcome.
So we talked about how, it like, Community could have kept going, but they were like, we know we have to go. So that 70s show,
Jesus,
it's funny for a bit, you know, and it's like, you know, everyone's smoking weed and they're hanging out in the water tower and it's a small town and you're like, okay, they're hijinks, they're friends, whatever. At a certain point, it's like, hey, we did the high school thing, we gotta go, right? And the television network is like, no, you have to stay. Your father's gonna have a heart attack. You're gonna take a gap year because you just go insane. And, you know, you're just going to stay in this town so much longer than you possibly can. The thing about it is you feel the devil's hands on this one.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not invisible, the conflict or the writing. It's so obvious and, like, contrived and silly. You're like, these people wouldn't be here anymore. And we know we like their show, but it's actively, like, hard to watch. And, like, in the last season, the main character's gone. And I want to say that a lot of people were like, that's stupid, and we hated the new guy and whatever. I was like, I'm fine with it. Because it made more sense to keep going. I'm not saying anything.
No, I get you. Because, I mean, he was, oh, God, what's his name?
Yeah, Eric Foreman.
Yeah, Eric Foreman. He was the straight man to all their goofiness, you know?
It's also kind of a dirt bag.
He's also kind of a dirt bag, yeah.
As a character, but like, yeah.
Yes. As a dude, sure, he's fine. But, like, losing him wasn't a huge hit. I think if you lost, like, you know, Ashton Kutcher or whatever, who was a little bit more of, like, a goofy guy, like, kind of drove the antics.
Yeah, more energy.
Yeah, you would not have the same dynamic on the show.
Yeah, most of them would have left, if not all of them. Yes. And the thing is, like, in the last season, when the main character's gone, you don't feel the loss because, you know, you don't see the writers mucking around so much. So it's a lot looser, so it didn't feel as stressful to watch for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shows up in the last episode, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And it's not really a good finale, but the last, like, 10 seconds are some of the best television I've ever seen because, it, you know, it's that 70s show, right? And then they're doing the countdown because it's 1979, and it goes 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and then it cuts.
That's good.
And I'm like, it's good.
That's
good.
I'm
like, that's so clever. That's not how the show was written, the rest of it. But anyway, my point is that it was really funny, but it was strained because it kept going longer than it should have. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't willing to reinvent itself until it was too late.
Yeah. What We Do in the Shadows is a good show. Season 2 is now airing on FX and Hulu.
3.
I meant
we're
3.
Season 3 now.
Season 3, excuse me.
I've been watching it.
It's good. It's really good. About vampires. It's like a mockumentary about vampires. It works. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, another FX show. That's really good. It's been on air long enough where they are having you can tell they're having a lot of fun creating different things. Like, last season they did, like, a noir episode where it was all black and white.
Ooh, that's fun. I like that.
Yeah, they always do something funky and weird. They do little, like, bottle episodes where, like, oh, well, maybe they're stuck in the bar because of there's a jumper on the roof or something. But it's about 4 friends and they're potentially their dad. It's left ambiguous. But, like, they're all terrible dirtbag people living in Philadelphia. And they're so stupid. And they're so dumb. And they're awful. And they're evil. But, boy, is it entertaining to watch. BoJack Horseman.
Yes.
That counts.
It does.
And
any comedy is a sitcom, according to Google. So, yeah. And
Jesus Christ, is it sad, man.
It is.
So it's about an actor, BoJack Horseman. He's a horse who's kind of a washed up guy, celebrity. He was big in the 90s. Now it's the, you know, late 2000s, and he needs money. He needs to be somebody. He kind of are invited into a zany world of meta film references and friends, I guess, if you can call them that, co-workers. It's a great time. It's entirely depressing because they deal with, like, substance abuse and they deal with depression and, like, imposter syndrome and, like, sexuality and, like, God, just being a terrible person and, like,
every kind of grief that you can possibly think of dealing with.
And it's a cartoon.
Yeah, we talked about in some episode in the Super Past about how sometimes animation is used to, like, sneak in these complex ideas. That sounded mean. I'll amend that.
No,
what I mean to say is that sometimes it's easier to, like, be approached by, like, an idea that's sad or an idea that's kind of intense when it's animation, because you're lulled into a sense of calm.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And BoJack Horseman definitely does that, because, like, if you saw a still from it, you'd be like, ah, this is probably, like, a dumb Adult Swim thing. No offense to Adult Swim. But it's so deep and it's so dark. And like the side characters in BoJack Horseman. So, you know, we talked about ensembles. Mm-hmm. Side characters are incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Diane, Mr. Peanut Butter, Princess Carolyn, Todd.
Oh, Todd.
Like, you love all of these people. And honestly, they make it out pretty okay. The show believes in itself enough that it's willing to give entire episodes and arcs to these side characters. They're willing to grow them as well as the main character.
Yes.
And that shows a confidence that I respect. And they also pull it off. Which is
It's good. One of the most well-done shows I've ever seen. It's consistently great.
Okay, so I'd like to talk about, I forgot already. So.
Cool. Good show. I love that one.
You're welcome, guys. okay, so this was kind of on for a shorter period of time, but The Good Place, and I'm going to try not to spoil all of the things about this show, but The Good Place, which was also on NBC, was kind of about this woman who is accidentally accepted into heaven, mm-hmm. and she's the only one that knows that. She's, like, legitimately a dirtbag. And she's like, I have to try to make myself a better person before they find out and they throw me back to hell. And I'm like, this is such a wild... NBC, this is a wild pitch. Because this does not seem like the thing you would do. But they do it and they commit to it. And it's a show that constantly reinvents itself.
Yeah.
Like, maybe toward like, the second to last season, it gets, like, a little stale and you're like, what are you doing? But then they nuke themselves again. They're like, we're willing to do this and we're willing to try different things. And the cast is great. The cast is very lovable. And it's also one of those things where it was only on for 4 seasons. And in season 4, they have all these concepts where you're like, this could have been season 5 or 6. But they're like, no, we trust the show. And we're going to end it on a good note where all the characters like make it out okay. Sort of.
I mean, they're still dead, so.
Yeah, It's a bit of a dark ending, but ultimately rewarding. Mm-hmm. And the characters also all grow as people because the literal point, you know, is all about like heaven and hell and redemption, even though it's kind of wrapped up in a comedy. Like I said, with animation, sometimes sitcoms can really like hit you emotionally in ways that you're not prepared for.
Yes.
And I appreciate that.
What else?
I don't know. What do you got?
Well, I have one, but you're going to make fun of me for it.
That, you know, that's fine.
Reba. I have... the fondest of memories. So Reba was on at like 9 o'clock. It was like 2 episodes. 9 o'clock on back when it was KTLA, right? And so when I was a little kid, like on Friday nights, it'd be like a big event. I'd take a shower and then I'd be all ready for bed. And I'd sit in front of the TV, watch Reba for 2 episodes of Reba. And then the nightly news would come on and be like, a shooting in downtown LA. And I'm like, I have to go to bed now. And that was my childhood for like a significant portion of my life was watching Reba on Friday nights and like just being joyful. And I had no idea what the show was about because it was like, oh, divorce and like teenage pregnancies. And I'm just like colors and shapes and woman with red hair. And she has a Southern accent and it's kind of fun. That was it. That's all I needed. And some could say, that's all I still need.
Give me the shapes.
Give me them shapes.
If we're talking about like just kind of watching things when you're young and you don't know what life is, mm-hmm. The Simpsons, big part of my life.
Love
and
the
also
Simpsons.
One of those things where you can just so easily watch. And, you know, not this is not a new opinion, but the Simpsons can't be killed, but they do need to stop.
Some of the later seasons aren't bad, though.
It's like SNL.
Yeah.
Where you'll kind of go through, like, a drought of quality for a really long time. But then there's, like, this firecracker moment where you're like, I was wrong, and it's the best show, and I'll watch it forever. And then the episode after that, you're like, oh, God, no.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's how it feels. The Simpsons, it's good, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good TV show. A lot of fond memories there. I do think maybe the best years are kind of behind it.
Oh, for sure.
Hard to explain. But it's one of those things where it's each episode's kind of like neatly wrapped up and whatever happens kind of ends. And every October, they're like, what if we just got batshit and did Trios of Horror and everyone just got murdered in funny ways? And I'm like, great, good idea, cool. There's a really good episode where it's like Christmas and like the year 2058 or whatever, and that it's really like endearing and they really understand the characters. And then there's a really good episode where I think it's called The Summer of 4'2", where like Lisa accidentally convinces people that she's cool and she hangs out with them on the beach. And there's like a joke every 5 seconds and it's so fucking funny. And it's such like a good example of what the show can be when it like commits to comedy.
Yeah. I've had in the past, I've had a really hard time writing sitcoms.
Okay.
I know that's, like, not really a thing, but, like, you know, we went to school for screenwriting.
I think.
In ideas, you know. I mean, we did. We paid for it. I mean, I paid for it. Did you not?
Is that what that, is that what that letter is in the mail?
Did you just... I think it's... here's the thing. I'm going to say this, which might be a little mean. I think I feel like everyone thinks they can write a sitcom, but I think it's really hard to write a really good sitcom.
No, that's not mean at all. I think that's correct.
Thank you.
Because I think starting it might seem easy, and maybe it is easy, but making it last and being willing to change. I had a whole thing written down. when you have a successful sitcom,
yes,
you have to have a lovable group of characters. You want romantic quests. And personally, I think you need to have the exhausting, rewarding, and sometimes fantastic journey to becoming a better person.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the best shows are about people, like, struggling with that and becoming better, you know, whether it's, like, The Good Place or Community or what have you. It's, like, rewarding to watch people become better and become, like, more themselves, you know, become confident, because then you're like, that's great. But you also have to be willing, and a lot of shows do not do this, to shake things up now and again. Maybe you should jump the shark. If you do it early enough, you can make it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let the characters outgrow whatever your original plans were.
Yes.
If it's better for them.
Yes.
You know, if it's better for the audience, then be willing to change.
I agree wholeheartedly. Those are very good thoughts and comments. I got nothing else to add. If anything, the more I say, it diminishes from your points.
I want to mention a show that was lost to time.
Lost?
No.
Debris?
You can find... I'm sure you're all familiar with Facebook Watch, right? We all know it. We all love it. We all got the app on our phones, yeah? No, you don't know what that is? Well, apparently America doesn't know what that is either, because apparently they made shows on Facebook Watch, and then they disappeared, and they went, what? Specifically, I'm talking about Strangers, which was a TV show that ran from 2017 to 2018, and it was two seasons, and it was a show about this bisexual woman who... She broke up with her boyfriend, and then she had an extra room in her apartment. She's like, oh, I'll just make it an Airbnb. I'll just let fucking freaks come and live in here.
Safe.
And they did.
Safe.
But it was, like, really funny, because one episode it would be like, here's this, like, religious cult. Kind of tame, but still, like, what the fuck. And then one day it was like, this film crew is going to shoot here. And it was, like, really dynamic and really interesting, because they, like, kept changing things up. And the first season I was like, this is great. And it was in California, and I was like, cool. And then in season two, they go to New York. And I'm not saying that I like Los Angeles more, but I do. But it loses a little bit in the shuffle, because season one was all about forming this relationship with this cool woman. And you're like, that's great. And then at the end, it's like, well, I gotta move. And then it just collapses. And I'm like, okay, why was I here?
So,
and then...
does she get a two-bedroom apartment and then rent out one room in New York City?
No, okay, that's the thing. When she gets to New York, she becomes the renter and actually ends up having to live in all these different places because she doesn't have, like, a stable place to live, which is not, you know, ideal.
I don't think that's what happens.
I know this. I'm not Facebook Watch, okay?
Okay.
As far as a writing standpoint, it was a clever way to, like, we'll change up the formula slightly, but it's still the same heart.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one really good episode where she ends up staying with this Russian man who's trying to make his home into an escape room. And at the end of the episode, they have to solve it, but she's fighting with her best friend the whole time, so they suck at it, and it's, like, really funny. And I'm like, that's cool. But because it was on Facebook Watch, nobody knew it existed.
Yeah.
So it just vanished.
Oh, that's
and,
sad.
Like, they even laid, like, cool plans, because she wrote an article about her experience living with all these different people, and people were like, this is great. We want you to do an international version, and we'll fund it. And I'm like, that would be a really cool season, but Facebook Watch, so it disappeared.
Yeah.
It's wild. I know we have a lot of streaming services now, and things can get lost in the shuffle, but things can also get lost in the shuffle in ways that you can't even imagine.
Well, yeah, because I couldn't imagine Facebook Watch...
I always want to say more things, but I feel like if I do, I'm just going to cut it. That's a conundrum that I live with. You know?
Being the hand of God, do I smite everything?
Do I kill all, or do I kill all?
It's God, but he's that meme, and it's a cat, and it says, can I has a cheeseburger? I don't know, God, can he has a cheeseburger?
Can God make a cheeseburger that he cannot have? There's only one Connecticut.
They're like, we're cops, but we hunt demons.
And the assistant walks through a giant portal
that he thought was art.
The walls are shaking, mirrors are falling.
She sees the devil, and I think it might be her dad.
And I'm killing people, and there's a frog detective, and you're...
Hey everybody, welcome to Middle Watch, our famous segment where we watch an episode randomly in the middle of a TV show with no context. And then we talk about it. We don't do this because we hate television. We love television. There's just too much of it. So we're going to try to do some of the adventuring for you and let you know what's good. Or what's Friends from College. Today we did Friends from College. Season 2, Episode 6, Free Fall. It was a Netflix show until it wasn't.
We start off the episode with a character named Tag, who I don't know if he's a friend from college. I kind of hope not, because damn, are they just dunking on him the rest of the episode. But anyways, he's like... base jumping off buildings.
Kind of illegally, yeah.
Yeah, that's that. And you go, will this become relevant again? And it doesn't for a really long time.
And then we cut to Ethan and Sam, who I think are kind of the will-they-won't-they couple
yes.
of this show. Like, they're hanging out in the apartment. And then, you know, Alan walks in. He's very much dressed like a never-nude. Just has, like,
I wrote that on there, too. Little Daisy Duke, son.
Denim shorts. He's like, hey, are you guys sleeping together? And then they say the word loosey-goosey about 10,000 times, like a good old Gilmore Girls sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, awkward, inhuman, cool.
Yeah, so it ends with them being like, are we dating? And she's like, I mean, deuces. And like, just like books out of there. I feel like there's some commitment things that need to be worked
there's
out.
There's some stuff there, but then it gets worse. So then we cut away. And it's Liz,
mm-hmm.
who is, fun fact, Robin from How I Met Your Mother. She's, like, moving out with the help of Nick, a character that you're going to learn to hate soon. So she's moving out with the help of Nick, and then this dude is laying on the couch, and his name's Charlie. And he's like, you know what, Liz? You're a user, and you suck, and you're a terrible person. And Nick's like, hey, man, what is happening?
Yeah.
And I think she's moving out of his place, like, they broke up.
Yes.
So, you know, he's a little jaded, but, like, don't be there.
Yeah.
You know, just don't be there. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And then, so Nick is like, hey, you should be cool. And then Charlie's like, oh, you want me to be cool? And such begins a haunted Pennywise dance into insanity, because he gets off the couch and then does a bunch of dancing for, I don't know,
a lot of
40 to 10 minutes.
Fortnite dances, and it's completely silent.
It's very scary.
And
it's
I know it's supposed to be awkward, but it's like, it lasts about
too
like
awkward.
25 seconds too long. And like, then he kicks a soccer ball and it like breaks some things. And he's like, I'm sorry, that wasn't very cool. And then Nick is like, it was cool until it wasn't cool. And I was like...
Dialogue.
So that's my biggest gripe. And immediately, I need to mention this because it comes up so fucking often in this show. It thinks it's funny when it repeats itself. And repetition is funny sometimes.
When it's not forced.
Yeah.
Like that.
I could maybe get the loosey-goosey, potentially. They say it about 45 times, and I'm not...
too many times.
I'm not, like, being...
It feels like dialogue in a vacuum. I don't want to... No offense to the actors, because I think a lot of them are good.
Very talented.
They do very well, especially later in the episode when they're actually able to, like, do stuff.
Yeah.
But there are times when I'm like, did we read this dialogue beforehand? Because it feels a little strange.
The dialogue's just broken, you know?
I agree.
It's
just
repetition for fun. And I feel like they also have the same conversations, like, several times. We cut to Sam and her ex-husband.
I feel like they're separated on the almost divorce.
Yeah,
like they're real
I haven't divorced. Signed them papers yet. But they're at like a parent teacher conference, and the teacher's like, "Your son's doing great," and they're like, "Cool." And the dad stands up and like kisses the teacher, and she's like, "I'll see you later,"
in front of the ex-wife. And then they argue. They're in the stairwell, and Sam's like, "Hey, that's not great because that's like." That's our kid's teacher, and if you fuck that up, then we probably can't go here anymore.
Yeah.
And the dad's like, I can do whatever I want because I'm cool, and I fuck you. He doesn't say that. That's the vibe.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
These are the people we follow. These are the people we follow. Anyway.
Yeah, he's terrible, and she's whatever. Oh, also, their kid's name is Dashiell.
You know,
it's
Dashiell.
It's Dash, but there's also like
Dancer.
An EL at the end, like one of the goddamn reindeer.
So that's a wild scene. And do we want to talk about the closer? And the fixer.
Oh, God.
Ray Donovan of it all.
Yeah, we have
that's
to.
A lot.
Because that's just another...
It's another bit that keeps coming up in the episode. Yeah.
And it's another form of repetition that's not funny. That's the thing is, there's two very funny people in the scene. But, like,
yeah.
God
Both of these are, like, good comedic actors in the scene.
Yeah, it's Billy Eichner and Keegan-Michael Key, and it's like, they're just suffocating in the scene.
Ethan's a writer, and his best friend is Max, who's not in the scene yet. And basically, Max and Ethan have worked together to write things, but usually Ethan is published kind of on his own. And basically, Max's boyfriend, Felix, shows up and is like, hey, I think that you should be co-writers because that would be more fair to him. And he's not, he doesn't really want to talk to you about it because it's awkward, but mm-hmm. he wants to have, you know, a piece of the pie. He doesn't phrase it like that. He doesn't phrase it like a normal human being would say those things. He's like, I'm Ray Donovan and I'm the fixer and I'm here to fix this.
He literally says that. Like, that's not a joke.
Ethan is like, well, I'm the closer and I'm closing it. And then fucking Felix is like, wait, I had one more thing to say. And then he digs in his briefcase for about 3 hours and then pulls out a piece of paper and he's like, I'm gonna fix it. And I'm like, we said that dialogue already. It wasn't funny the first time.
No.
And you're bringing it back. It was bad the first time.
It's bad all the
time.
And
this guy's, this isn't even the part of the episode that's insane. Because we have to talk about the worst thing in the universe. And then we have to talk about, like, a really, really, really good scene.
Yes.
So it's a journey this episode on the middle watch train. So Liz, who just kind of broke up with the soccer douchebag, is staying with Nick because she doesn't really have anywhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking, and, you know, soccer douchebag said this whole thing about how Liz uses men, and she's like, do I use men? And Nick's like, no, not really. And he's trying to awkwardly, like, put a sheet on a couch. Like, okay, what are you, rich? Just lay on the couch.
I do like that, though, because every time he tucks in one corner, I don't know if this was intentional, but it just untucks from the other corner.
So they talk, and then, okay, also important, this whole scene, there's a giant neon blue light that says fun boy on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
It's huge.
It's impossibly huge. It's kind of like a barcade.
Yes.
Like something you seen a barcade, you know. And she's like, that's a lot. And he's like, yeah, I don't know how to turn it off. And I'm like, it's your house,
it's good.
Like, what?
But it's good though. I'm like, that's funny.
No, it's funny. It's a good set piece because it makes the scene dynamic, and it's kind of a cool light because he's kind of a loser. Mm-hmm. So it's like a funny joke. I'm gonna give him that. And they play a cool song, and they show him trying to fall asleep and he can't because it's a couch. And you're like, okay,
it's also the big light that's constantly on.
Anyway, the part here, it is.
Yep.
Guys, here's the thing that just sends me to the afterlife. So Liz is asleep and she's like, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna go to the bathroom. Okay, and she's gonna go to the bathroom and she opens the door, but guess what? There's somebody in there. It's Nick, and he's masturbating, just straight up,
just going
to town,
bear palming it like a goddamn animal.
He didn't lock the door. I think the door lock might be broken, but one etiquette rule, if somebody is sleeping in your house as a guest, maybe don't do
like
that.
Like, two doors down? Yeah, just
maybe don't do that on that night. I think etiquette-wise, maybe just don't be doing that is how I feel about this. And it's the most awkward scene. It's so awkward. It's not good awkward in a funny way. It's like sad awkward, almost like in a Midsummer way where it hurts you.
Yeah.
But this is not a horror film, so that's not the goal here.
Yeah.
So it's a failure of a scene.
Yeah.
And it's insane because he's like, oh no, it's fine. And then and he's like, and she's like, I'm just gonna go. And he's like, no, you should stay, I love having you here, I love you. And I'm like, what?
Ooh, baby,
what the fuck? And he's like, oh, I'm sorry I said that. He doesn't wash his hands.
Nope.
So that's a sin. And then he just awkwardly passes her, and it's horrible, and it's so bad, and I hate it so much. It's just afterlife. I'm in the afterlife with this. It's awful.
Yeah.
Fuck,
man. No, it's
what,
it's not,
no,
great. And then the next morning they're getting breakfast or eat breakfast together, you know, at the
and
guy's,
like,
house.
I would have left,
like,
already.
Yeah,
100% would have left already because that would not make me feel super safe.
No.
Liz
is like,
and she tries to make a joke, mm-hmm, about how there was a giant blonde gorilla in the bathroom masturbating in her dream, like it was a bit. And he was like, haha, funny, I guess. And it's,
yeah,
awkward.
And then so their friend Tag, he, the base jumper, he's like live streaming his jump, and they're like, oh, I guess we'll watch it. And they watch it, and as he's jumping, his chute, like, doesn't work, and he falls to his death. And they're like, oh my god, that's awful. And Nick, the, you know, the creep, he's, like, eating yogurt, and they're like, oh, should you stop eating? He's like, I had no idea I was still eating, and he just keeps on eating. And I'm like, that's good. I'm like, that's actually pretty funny.
And then the actual episode happens.
Yes.
Finally. Because in the description, and the reason
I can
why
read
I chose
it to
this
you,
is,
I can read you the description.
Yes, please do, please do, please do.
It says, the gang attends an extreme funeral. Ethan gets an earful from Felix, and awkward encounters keep on coming for Lisa. I just want you to know how far we are into the description of this episode, and we just got to what the episode's about. But it smash cuts to a funeral that starts with I'm more than a bird, and it's great. Like, the funeral scene is great. It's really good. So the funeral is being, like, live streamed to a YouTube channel, and it's being sponsored by Mountain Dew. Code Red. Yes. It's so good. It's like, all the jokes are there. They're making fun of their dead friend because apparently he's a dumbass, and they're like, yeah, who could have seen this coming?
Of course he's a dumbass. He died breaking the law like an idiot. Yeah. There's one point when they're like, how tall was the building? And one of them is like, one story too tall. And I'm like, that's funny.
It's so that's good. Funny. Like, they're all making fun of him, and they're all like, we shouldn't sit together. But they do, because, like, they're friends.
Yeah. From college.
So his, like, the Tag's jumping buddy, he, like, makes this speech about, like, he's like, you know what will never stop? You know what will never stop? Because we'll never stop. And they're like, what? And they're like, never stop drinking Mountain Dew. And I'm like, damn. This is really good. Like, it's...
There are a lot of funny
real
lines.
Quick, can I say the funniest line that I've heard?
Of course.
In this episode, yep. Was, I packed his chute, but I know he wouldn't be mad at me. I've worked so many funerals before in my life, like hundreds of funerals, and like, honestly, that's some of the shit that people will say. And that's,
he's like, yeah, it's my fault, but
I knew he'll be cool with it.
I know he'd be like, it's fine, the life that was extinguished,
yeah,
we don't know where it went, we have no way to know,
nowhere,
but it's fine. Whatever,
Mountain Dew, baby.
I like, there's a jam sesh.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that Ethan and Max,
yes,
they actually come to, like, an agreement that they'll write the next book together. And it's, like, good. And it actually feels like something that, even if the awkward fixer scene hadn't happened, which it shouldn't have happened, this scene still would have worked.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And it was nice to see them, like, agree. And then Nick rolled in, a creep. But they had, like, this cool jam session in the middle of a funeral. And, like, you can tell they're friends and they're having a really good time. And then Sam was like, guys, we're at a funeral. But it's so funny because it's like such a carefree moment when the characters cut loose. Nowhere else in the show does it feel that.
No.
The rest of the show, it's like, you know, it's puppet strings. It's awkward. It's forced. But this, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
The funeral is loose. The funeral is
cool. I'm going to say no other time in the show do the characters have any chemistry besides this moment. And it's really sad. It's really sad because they all deserve better, you know? But anyways, there's some loose ends that get tied up. I don't really care.
Do you want me to explain it, or do you just want to...
I want to steamroll to the last scene. But so, Sam and Ethan end up hooking up again, and they're like, remember in college when we would just make decisions, and we were children, and we shouldn't be making decisions because we were children? Yeah, those are good times. And then, Ethan's cooking some crepes, or creepies, for...
No!
For breakfast. And guess who shows up but Sam's
sort of John.
Jerk of a husband. And he hides. Ethan hides. And Sam's like, oh, I was making crepes because I really like crepes. And then Ethan sneezes or something.
Yep.
Ex-husband opens the cellar door because they have a basement, apparently. And Ethan falls down the stairs and the ex-husband has a heart attack.
Kind of.
And there's this, like, you know, crazy moment where Sam's, like, yelling to both people, being like, I'm calling 911 because you hurt your leg and you're having a heart attack and everything's fine.
Yeah, Ethan explodes up the stairs and he's like, I'll do CPR, and then he's, like, trying to kiss him and breathe light, which you're not supposed to do anymore because of the viruses. Yeah.
What?
The Waterworld stunt shows out there. And it's, like, a scene that's funny in theory, but there's something, like, a little bit off about it, so it doesn't quite
It's kind
hit.
Of heartless.
Yeah, because physical comedy, like, definitely has a place, and there's a lot of ways that you can, like, really nail it.
Yeah.
You know, like, for example, was it Tobias dressed as a nanny falling through the glass coffee table?
Well, yeah, yeah.
From Arrested Development? Just an example. but for whatever reason, this scene's, like, a little too hectic, or maybe the pacing's a little bit off, and you're like, okay, that's funny in theory, but then it ends, and the ambulance people show up, and he's like, I guess it wasn't a heart attack, and they're like, people died because of you. And then they leave, and then John's like, are you guys together? And he's, like, really mad about it. And I'm like, hey, bud, sleeping with the teacher, you freak.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is this about? And she's like, yeah, we are together. And he's like, fine, good luck, and he leaves like a bitch. And then Ethan's like, hey, want a crepe? And I'm like, that's a funny line. And it's a funny bit, and then, you know, the show ends with a fun song, and I'm like, okay, bad. But at least we had the
like
funeral.
It had. I'm not gonna say redeeming moments because it wasn't redeemed. It had good moments in a bad episode and potentially in a bad show.
Well, the wild thing is, if I can say something about the real world. So it originally premiered on July 14th, 2017. Mm-hmm. Reviews were not super kind, but Netflix was like, hey, we'll give it another shot. We got the cast, we got the people, might as well. Season 2 released on January 11th, 2019, and it was canceled on February 18th of the same year. So the hammer came down real quick.
What a weird thing.
I just remember one of the big reasons I picked this show is because I remember early when Netflix was pushing it pretty hard, mm-hmm. and they were like, hey, Robin's in this, and you remember How I Met Your Mother, and this is like a new thing. And I was like, oh, this could be pretty cool. I was in college at the time. I was like, okay, I'd watch this. And then it just like vanished. And I was like, something bad must have happened here.
No, because I remember seeing trailers and being like, I love this cast. Like, I'm going to watch this. And I didn't, because I just didn't hear anything after. And then you told me to watch this show, and I was like, why does this sound familiar? Why does this cast look familiar? And I went back after I watched this episode, watched the trailer for it, and I was like, holy shit, I was hyped for this. Like, I wanted to watch this.
Yeah, me too. Like, for legitimately for a bit, I was like, yeah, no, I could see myself watching this, but then, like, it just vanished, and now I know why.
Rough. Yeah, real underwhelming. And did it feel longer than 27 minutes? It felt really long to me.
It felt really long, partially because, one, Nick, what the fuck?
Jesus.
But two, because most of the episode should have been the funeral.
Yes.
And, like, there are other shows that did that. How I Met Your Mother had the good bit when Marshall's dad died, which was fucking brutal, mind you. But they had a pretty good episode that was just focused on that funeral, and they were trying to cheer their friend up, and then there was, like, the voicemail that he found. Good episode. Anyway, my point is, you can easily do a funeral episode, and I think they should have just committed to that.
Oh, for sure.
And they could easily have all the other side conflicts still happening, but just in the background. Because funerals are just such a fucking hassle. I think they could have gotten a lot better stuff out of that.
Oh, for sure.
Especially because the cast was actually allowed to be together, which kind of helps when a show is a sitcom.
The good news is, most everybody involved is doing better things.
Yeah.
And doing nothing would also probably be a better thing. Do you hear that on the wire? Oh my gosh.
You're gonna watch a city block get blown up by a jet.
There's a dog. There's a cool purple outfit.
And if you put it on, the world ends.
It doesn't make sense. Because
it's weird and in space, but on Earth, I don't know.
Who thought? Who would have thought? Not me.
Okay, so we've escaped college. I think I can safely say.
I think so too. Hey, population news and you, baby. Welcome to Newstown, our segment where we tell you shit you already know about. So, I think the biggest thing, most recent thing, is a little cheeky Matrix trailer. Matrix 4, we're doing another one, baby. That's what it's called.
The official title, The Matrix Resurrections, coming out December
22nd
on in theaters, but also on good old HBO Max, baby. I want to say that I'm surprised this movie is coming out this year because we had an information blackout for a long time on this. And given certain global events, I was like, I would totally understand if it got delayed to like June or something, you know, but
no, it's here.
They did it. Here it is.
The Mad Men did it.
I'm weirdly pumped. And yeah, I know The Matrix 2 and 3 are kind of an experience and a half, you know? I think the mech suits are cool, but it's also like, what the fuck?
The thing that I see, here's the thing. I'm not someone who, like, built my house on The Matrix.
That'd be hard to do.
It's fine. It's entertaining. But it, like, the best thing about The Matrix is that it looks fun to look at. Like, it's entertaining. And I can look at it and go, neat. So I'm not looking for this to be the most amazing movie in the world. I'm looking for a visual experience that I can put my teeth into, you know?
The trailer definitely is delivering on that visual experience. Something I really appreciate, and this is stupid to say, please, but like one of the first shots in the trailer is like a black cat, and I'm like, I get it, and I appreciate it, because that was a little glitch from the other film. I know what you're doing. But it looks so fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And also, one thing I appreciate is that, so, you know, The Matrix 1, he's fighting, he's jumping, and then he flies, and you're like, great, he can do crazy stuff now. And in this trailer, he's doing such crazy-ass shit. He's throwing people into walls. He takes a missile,
and he throws
a missile
it away.
Fired from a helicopter, and throws it into another helicopter. That shit's great, objectively speaking.
I'm so excited for the vision of the filmmakers, because it's only the one Wachowski, it's not both. I'm very excited for the vision to actually meet the technology of filmmaking to meet the vision.
Also worth mentioning that good old Colleen from Iron Fist, Jessica Henwick, is
in
this.
She's punching, she's kicking, awesome. She's jumping over police cars. Anyways, Keanu Reeves reprises his role as Neo. I was worried that we were going to get it as Neo being the Morpheus character training the next one.
I was thinking for a second they would do that, and I was like, I don't want that, really.
No, because we've already seen that, and that's just going to be another Star Wars movie that we've already seen. But I am more excited. It looks like it's going to be a Neo, very Neo-centric movie.
Yeah, which I like.
Which is great.
And it looks cool.
It's good.
I really don't have that much to say. Knives Out 2 is nearly done, according to Rian Johnson, so that's cool. It's surprising because they, you know, had everyone in the world in the cast, so congrats. There was a PlayStation showcase. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, the remake was confirmed. We kind of already knew this going in, but they had a little teaser, and they were like, here's Darth Revan, for the people who know what that is. And
then they go, nerds!
They're maintaining, story and characters, but again, from what we heard in the past, it's going to be more like a game that you play and not like a thing where it's turn-based. Yeah. So it's, you know, more of an experience. No offense, team.
Yeah.
So the team that brought us Spider-Man and then Spider-Man Miles Morales are doing Spider-Man 2. There's so many Spider-Man 2. I'm not complaining. And this one so it's Insomniac Games, and this has Kraven the Hunter and Venom. Mm-hmm. I would love, honestly, if they did a Spider-Verse game in the future, because obviously they probably don't have the rights to the Avengers, but if they want to get kooky with it, whatever they want to do, I'm into it. They also announced a Wolverine game, and that kind of looks sick. And what's funny, though, in the teaser, he's sitting at a bar, and all these people are, dead or knocked out, and this dude gets up with, a pocket knife. And I'm like, so you're trying to stab the guy who's made out of knives. That's the big strat.
That can heal.
Bad strat. Because then, the claws come out, and they're like, it's Wolverine! I'm like, that's great. I'm into it. The trailer dropped for Netflix's big December film, Don't Look Up, which is all about meteor madness. Got DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, and then every other actor on the fucking planet.
Yeah, it's such a huge cast. I mean, I'm sure everybody's just a bit character, but
Yeah, but it looks like a fun, dark comedy with some clever writing, and I'm sure the world won't actually end.
I'm really jazzed on it.
Oh, also, apparently Halloween Kills, which is coming out October 15th, is also going to go to Peacock Premium day one. So if you have that, which you don't, then you can watch it, but you don't have it. So
the nightmare that just never ends.
Keep your fingers crossed.
If that orange juice was just a mega lawsuit.
Good old Cyberpunk 2077.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, there's a lot of room to grow.
You know? So, you know what I've been saying this entire year about Cyberpunk 2077 developed by CD Projekt Red?
This is the first time I've heard about this game. Yeah.
I've said, hey, if you're waiting for that next-gen update, it's not coming this year. It's not coming, maybe ever, but it's definitely not coming this year. And,
okay.
We have news that it might be delayed. They're not saying anything. But the absence of saying something.
Your cyber silence speaks volumes, yes.
Yes. So recently, Michael Nowakowski, who is the project, the CD of it. No, he is the senior vice president of business development. He was asked about when the game might be coming, an enhanced version might be coming to the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X for the 20 people in the world that actually have one of those consoles. He says the target is to release the next-gen version of Cyberpunk 2077 late this year. At the same time, keeping in mind the lessons we've learned during the past year and taking into account that this project still remains in development, we can't say with full certainty that the production schedule will not change. So guess what? It's changing. I'm going to say, if I could put on my thinking cap and just think, when will this come out? November 2022. Ow, I just hit my hand on my desk. So November 2022, that's when I think it's going to come out.
We'll circle back in November 2022.
So Shane, thanks for having me on the podcast. Love being a guest. If people want to talk to us on social media, suggest a Middle Watch episode, or just say, hey, your opinions on this movie are really good, where should they reach out to us?
Well, hey, we are at Out of Dodge Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And you know what? If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, it'd be really cool if you could leave us a rating and then maybe a little review, a little comment, a little hello. Because you know what? We appreciate it, and it helps us get seen by the rest of the world. Thank you, everybody, for listening wherever you are. Hope things are cool.
Stay safe. Wear a mask if you go out. Get vaccinated if you're able. You know, let's just give this whole thing a good old college try, you know? Again.
But not a Friends from College try.
Not cause... Friends from College try, because that tanked. No. And we don't want to tank.
On this, and on this, and welcome to our video.
We had a reptile. We wish it wouldn't have been...